Blog Talk Radio.
Folks, prepare for your mind to be blown. I am John Jordan. I'm here with BD Galoff. Welcome to Isles Beat. How are you doing tonight, BD?
I'm good.
We are here for yet another episode, another week. Lots of hockey talk to get into. Before we get into that, sometimes a little reality check smacks us in the face. And I would like to ask for all the people that listen to this show to send positive vibes down here to my area of Florida. We've got a little guy, I won't go into specifics, but a little guy in our little circle who needs all the positive energy he can get these days, and especially this time of year, any time of year. But, you know, for him and his people, a little uplifting from across the nation, our small reach that we have here. I know that there's good people out there, and any sort of positive energy that comes from any direction down to Southwest Florida here would be much appreciated. So much love to all of you, and please send some of that back in our direction. Not me personally, again, but in our little circle of friends, and just trying to do my little part. But in any event, hope everybody's doing well. We've had, information, more things to sift through since we last spoke. Had a lot of action lately on the on the Travis Hamonic trade front. We've got another, I don't know, what do you want to call it, a half 10-game segment to break down. Ryan Strome is back. I took a game in person recently. We've seen some complaints, heard some complaints here, there, and otherwise about the travel situations from Long Island to Brooklyn and so on and so forth. And, we'll dig through all of that. But for now, I guess I'll turn it over to my co-host and see what's hot on his burner right now.
Howdy, folks. The Hamonic trade rumors, a lot of talk seem to gather. And there was certainly a lot of, reporting happening, especially from Sportsnet over there in Canada and TSN and everybody else, all the pundits. And it started to get hot and heavy, and it seemed possibly that something could actually happen by Thanksgiving or right after. And then upon the day of Thanksgiving, heard that all broke apart. So whatever talk was there right now kind of broke off, and I had to be the bearer of that information. I don't know if there's anybody else who's really kind of parroting that information, but if you've noticed today, and we've noticed in the last couple of days, some of those trade scenarios and denials of what the Islanders have refused have kind of trickled out in the last 2 days. So that gives you an idea that there are some frustrated teams and some items kind of leaking out or deliberately put out, but I've heard that all is quiet over with the Islanders right now, and they're just going to stand pat until they're happy with the return. And, those teams that were involved will have to come back to the table to meet that cost. I know that, there was the rumor that the Islanders said no to Big Buff over in Winnipeg, and that wasn't surprising at all because we talked about how the Islanders would not take a UFA back for Hamonic. So, and there's no value in that when Hamonic is somebody who's tied into long-term, and also, so, and, that they're going to stick to that price. So, and then of course there was another rumor that from Edmonton about a forward. I think it was a barrel. Is it? How do you pronounce it? My pronunciation is garbage.
Jordan Eberle. Eberle.
Like the Eberle brothers. So,
yeah, buddy.
Yeah, great. So,
What's my name again?
Stick with Frank. Anyway.
Frank, yeah.
Henry Rizzo. Henry Frank Ford. Yeah, Frank Rizzo. Yeah, Frank Rizzo. But basically, which also isn't surprising because the Islanders' priority is a defenseman. And they're not going to change from that. They're not going to leave the gap. And they're not going to take a forward and just hope for the best. The kids are not ready. And I know that everybody keeps on trying to push them in. We'll talk a little bit about that later. But they're just not going to do that. So you're seeing some of those rumors of what they've refused or might have refused come out. I think they've refused quite better offers. We'll see.
Just to jump in real quick, a couple mm-hmm. things. Number one, we've talked about this for 2 weeks straight now, and as long as it's not resolved, we'll keep talking about it. But
2 weeks, Brian Strait.
Hey, we don't. No, we don't mention him. He's back. He's been back out of the lineup again lately. Is what it is. I think I tweeted the other night when I was at the game. I show up to my first game in person all season, and Brian Strait's a healthy scratch. Is that coincidence? I don't think so, man. That's karma. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's the cosmos in motion. Anyway, so here's the thing. We talked when this first popped up that the Travis Hamonic thing is something that was brought up apparently before the season started, but only recently has been made public. And that means to the general public and also, to the masses, to players, to agents, to teams. So everybody now has their own agendas, right? But here's the thing. The Islanders are the team that has this situation to be dealt with. And I think a lot of the laymen out there can look at this from a position now that they can actually relate to a little bit in an analogy that I'm gonna hope that you understand and hopefully you can riff off of. But they're 25 games in, okay? So most everybody under the sun these days plays fantasy football or fantasy something or whatever the case may be. And let's say that a few weeks into that season, you suddenly find yourself with a player that has to go for one reason or another. It's quite different. That's fantasy. This is reality, but bear with me. Maybe you found yourself in an unexpected situation of depth. You can't fit a guy into the lineup. Maybe you found yourself in a spot where somebody's really coming after you. They really like a guy, and you feel like you have to maximize on value or whatever the case may be. You feel like you have to move that player, so you dig around. You start asking, questions here and there. You got people calling you, texting you, whatever the case is. And suddenly you realize, you know what? Somebody offers you a Dustin Byfuglien equivalent. Player for player, maybe that's something that's palatable, but pending UFA, big money coming up, that you don't want to give yourself a secondary problem. So you exercise a little bit of patience. You say, you know what? Yeah, I have this asset that I can move. But right now, keeping him is not anything that hurts me. And I've already determined what my value is for this player. So I'm going to ride this out for a little while. And when somebody really has a problem, then they'll come and get me. For instance, to go back to my analogy directly, in the fantasy football scenario, you've got a piece that you want to dangle on somebody that wants them really badly. Let's say it's a quarterback. Well, you know what? They're not giving you enough, but 3 weeks down the road, 4 weeks down the road, that guy's other quarterback might get hurt. Something might happen, some unexpected factor. And as long as you've firmly established what the value is that you think for that player is right now, when you have time on your side, you don't have to jump in anything. And in my opinion, my outsider, humble opinion, I think the Islanders are in a very similar situation to that, where they don't have to jump in anything. They've established what they believe is the value for this particular asset, and they don't have to move. They've gauged the market initially. I believe they've had enough time to understand what's on the table right now, what is and what isn't possible, and they can put that in their back pocket, and they can cease conversations until somebody's ready to move up on whatever they've already offered or whatever it hasn't been presented yet that might be out there, and then revisit it at a later date. Am I completely off the map on that, or am I somewhere in the ballpark?
I think you're somewhere in the ballpark. The other part of it is the GM game. The GM game is to play it cool and not be in a rush, even if the Islanders would like it done sooner than later. Nobody's going to admit to that. There's a game that gets played out where everybody can needs to act like it doesn't matter, that it's casual, that, you know, they can do it at any time. So there's that as well. And, you know, and we know in the past that Garth has held the line on certain players and certain values, and they're going to do so here. You know, if they run Hamonic for the season, then they'll just deal with it. You know, him at the draft and just do it for prospects and futures. They do quite well during the drafts. So it's not a bad deal. They don't want to sacrifice the now unless they feel that they're getting value. And that seems to not really get into some of the team's heads, especially with the things that keep on leaking out. And you know it's not the Islanders that's doing it. So it's coming out from Edmonton. It's coming out from Winnipeg. There's, you know, there's the question of who outed the whole situation in the first place, which caused an argument because, to me, the most likely suspect is the one, you know, is Winnipeg itself, because where does Hamonic want to go? Home or closer to home? Where is that? Winnipeg. Who benefits from that being publicized and putting pressure on the Islanders? Winnipeg. Now, is that necessarily true? Maybe not. But to me, it's, you know, it seems, you know, the most likely culprit is the one that gains the most from it. But, you know, the whole process has been, you know, once it became an auction, it heated up and, you know, Garth held the line. And I think the offers were much better than the ones that are trickling out. I wish I could say a little bit more. But, you know, what I think we'll see them start to trickle out a little bit later. And the Islanders held the line, and talks have, you know, those teams have backed off for now, probably because of the holiday and everything else. But right now, everything is status quo. At the same time, the team has gone 3-1-1 in the last five. So not such a bad deal as long as the Islanders are rising, and then Strome has been called back and doing better. So these are things that could help the Islanders' situation anyway, and you really want to see them solidify. I didn't think they played that tremendously in that 3-1-1, but we'll take it. And, you know, we'll take it as it comes, and we'll, you know, we'll be down this road again as things heat up. But if you're kind of waiting for more rumors and innuendo and for that to heat up again, what you're really seeing, especially if you follow Dreger and Elliot Friedman, who's been all over this since the very beginning, now is kind of what you're hearing is what they said after the fact. Things are not really heating up, and despite talk from very, very good and much better sports reporters than I am on possible three-way trades and stuff like that, I haven't heard any such thing, and it's going to be, you know, it's nothing so fancy. It's, you know, one for one, or, you know, or thereabouts, or with one team and the other team. And I don't think it's going to be that fancy. And I think that what you're seeing is part of it is the cool down and the offers that the Islanders didn't take as it trickles out from each team as these, you know, as these pundits kind of dig around. And you'll see more, but don't mistake it. It's not heating up. It's cooled down. So, and I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. And, you know, in citing that, a lot of people had, you know, a lot of fans agreed, you know, the team is doing a little bit better. So it's not the worst thing in the world right now. You know, we all want to be immediately gratified and have everything kind of settled in our mind. And I'm sure Hamonic would like that the same way. And I think the Islanders would like that all settled. Because now is the time where the season's kind of in flux to kind of mess around with the chemistry a little bit. And let things settle out before it's too far within the season. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. It's just not happening, and we'll see, you know, make sure you follow along, and we'll keep you posted if that changes.
Well, remember, one of the things I mentioned in passing there was, you know, once this becomes public information to a certain segment of people and then onward and upward from there, you start to get several agendas in play. And I'm not talking about the big, huge names. Those guys don't often get played. But once you start having, you know, this little birdie from this team's camp and that little birdie from another team's camp and this agent and that agent or whatever the case may be, you're going to have a lot of different stories going out and about. It's it seems elementary sometimes that 2 + 2 = 4, but in this situation, in situations like it, that's not always the case. we've got a lot to work out here before it's all said and done. Another thing I was thinking is that, you know, we identified from the beginning that I think I was referencing that Ken Campbell Hockey News article where I believe it was Edmonton that was singled out as, you know, hey, what about this forward? I think it was Everly and Yakupov and a couple of other forward names that were, you know, bandied about there. And I you know, commented on how Isles Twitter and Isles Nation, whatever you want to call it, would probably quickly be so happy about hearing those names involved in these potential deals or these hypothetical deals people are coming up with. But, you know, they're losing one of their key defense pieces when Hamonic goes out the door. And so therefore we identified that, you know, a key defense piece probably has to come back. And that does seem to be the case. But I would like to throw it out there again and see what your thoughts are on it. I mean, the longer this goes, does that increase or decrease the likelihood of this becoming more than just a one-for-one about maybe one of those bigger potential packages coming back where you do see a couple of assets going with Hamonic and maybe, you know, that defenseman that we're talking about coming back, but maybe also some forward help. You know, the longer it goes, maybe there's more time to think about something like that.
Well, trades like that actually take much longer time to happen anyway.
And sometimes sometimes they're better suited for the offseason too.
Yeah, it takes a long time to work those kind of deals to pry multiple players, multiple contracts, and you know, the two teams that identified that would be willing and or possibly willing is obviously Edmonton and Colorado. I think that Edmonton has been balking, as we've followed reports, at the price. You know, the rumor was that the Edmonton was refusing to keep to put in Nurse or Klefbaum, and that kind of staved off conversation because the Islanders are not walking away without a defensive guy. So I think that's what kind of killed that. That said, they might come to the table if there's, you know, other teams. There's still their need. These teams and, you know, that we're talking about, Calgary, Colorado, these are not teams that are doing very particularly well. And eventually that pressure of playing it casual, where the GMs are concerned, eventually they're going to start to feel it or, you know, feel the need to pull a trigger. And that will bring them back to the table. Colorado certainly had rumors of Duchesne possibly being available. And then, you know, of course, you have a very good defenseman with Tyson Barrie. But once again, you know, it's very tricky to do those type of those multiplayer deals. And you have to have, you know, maybe it's back to what we originally thought. Despite the conversation and the auction heating up for a bit, it didn't result in anything, and maybe it requires that trade deadline to force those teams to finally ante up or forever hold their peace. And, you know, or maybe right before the holidays again, just like it heated up with Thanksgiving. It seemed to heat up right before the holiday and then all of a sudden broke off. Maybe it does it again right before Christmas. You know, we just don't know. But those are certainly possible scenarios. But for right now, I think that we should kind of strap in and think about, you know, we're halfway within the five-game increment. We've already seen 3-1-1. They've already risen to fourth within their conference. You know, some of the things are still not quite working as intended. The power play is still 19th overall, which is unacceptable. The peak, the penalty kill has actually risen. They're now ninth overall, and that's a good thing. But one of the things that's actually tailed off right now is faceoff wins. They're now 14th overall, which is middle of the pack. And you really want to see that go up again. When they played their best in the first 10-game increment, where even though they weren't playing on all cylinders, power play was fourth, PK was fourth, and faceoff wins was within the top five as well. you certainly want to see that rise up, especially the power play. So we'll see how that goes, but at least we have something. You know, if the Hamonic deals are not happening, and we need to kind of strap in for the season, let's at least it's with them kind of rising a bit, especially after a losing 10-game increment. And you know, you can't ask for more except for Strome to get back into gear and the team to play a little bit better.
Yeah, and let's not forget, you know, the last time we had a show last Tuesday, you know, they had lost two in a row. Yeah, that was, you know, the home and home to Montreal, but still two in a row nonetheless when everybody was kind of hoping that the West Coast swing would give them a little bit of momentum and coming off the home win against Arizona and yada, yada, yada. But now, you know, 7 points in four games, 7 out of 8, and that – certainly changes things a little bit as well. It's not just the holiday thing. It's not just the fact that, you know, they may be gauging the market or whatever. But, you know, they're relatively hot right now, and things are going pretty well. And lo and behold, if you look at it, and I don't often look at the overall league standings, but they're sixth overall in the entire league in points as of tonight, before tonight's game started. That's not so bad, kids, you know. I mean, there's a long way to go. Like I said before, they're only 25 games in. So many things can happen. But, you know, next, you know, as the season moves along with an ongoing situation like this, there's going to be ebbs and flows unless something comes along that's too good to pass up. But I think you're going to be able to look back in retrospect once something does go down with Travis Hamonic and understand the timing of it all. Was it during a particular lull in terms of wins and losses? Was it at the trade deadline? Was it because another team got desperate because of injury or some factor that we're not considering right now? There's so many things in play. Just got to kind of be patient and kind of ride it out. And I think the Islanders are in a good, pretty good spot right now as far as that goes.
Yeah, and it only gets better because, as you cited, Strait is now sitting where he belongs as an emergency plug-in. You have Hickey coming back in, and one of the things that I've noticed that a bad pairing can make both defensemen, you know, even if the one defenseman is actually good, they look terrible because it's a bad pairing. And I think that was what was going on with Strain and Zidlicky. I think that he's going to start to look a lot better to most fans playing with someone steady like Hickey, and who has, you know, and you're going to see a little bit more, you know, Hickey is going to bring balance to the dark side. I mean, the third pairing, and you know, he's somebody who's underrated by fans, and I think that now he's a little bit more appreciated, and you know. That presence will allow a little bit more steadiness and actually be maybe as a third pair, possibly look a little bit above average as per if you look at other third pairings within the NHL. But we'll see what happens. But, you know, that's something that's on its way up and, you know, finally, kind of, as long as Hickey can stay healthy, rectified for now and should, you know, help quite a bit.
Thomas Hickey is an interesting subject overall to me because when he was first picked up by the Islanders, did anybody ever think in the early going there that they would be looking at him as a steadying force on the blue line, especially when you think about it being next to a veteran? I mean, we've already said it about Lubomir Vyshnovsky when he was here, and now we're saying it about Marek Zidlicky. That's crazy how in a few short years things can change like that. And I think that, you know, you're totally right there. He steps back into the lineup and kind of steadies things. I was able to see that with my own eyes on Saturday. Yeah, Saturday here in Tampa. And, you know, it's just remarkable. Come along very quickly and, you know, been injured a couple times, and you can certainly feel his loss when he's not there. So I just think that's something neat. We didn't have script or anything, but something cool to kind of point out.
Yeah, as much as we've seen that Strait is not more than just a, you know, a depth plug-in at best. And probably better for a bad team than a good team. We've seen Hickey really kind of earn his place, even if it's in a third pairing. He actually makes that third pair above average. he's got, you know, everybody marks, oh, he doesn't have the size. Nobody clears the crease. And in this NHL, you don't, you know, as much as you would like it, especially during the playoffs, and I will agree there, he kind of gets overlooked because he does all the things slightly above average. And I think that right now on that third pair, you realize how valuable he is. You know, as the defense becomes more robust, you know, you see that he has a role here within the next couple of years as that third pairing, and how much needed, you know, and those, and the Islanders seeing those kind of from waivers, you know, potential, and he's lived up to that potential. Is he what he was picked to be on the LA Kings? No. And that's why defensemen pick so early are so tricky, and why the Islanders tend to try to avoid that, especially if you looked to their number one picks in the draft when they first started the rebuild, they would avoid defensemen like the plague, because the probability is much less that they'll turn into anything. And they, you know, if you're playing the probability game when you're doing a rebuild, you stick to the forwards that you feel that will be NHL players. So, and here Hickey is, but being, you know, a above average third pairing on a you know, a playoff level team. So, you know, let that continue.
Listen, he's a pretty good player. He's a very serviceable defenseman. 82 and 81 games respectively in each of the last two seasons. A little bit of a slow start this year in terms of games played just because of the injury, but he's going to have a real good year this season. I fully believe that. I think that can we blame some of that hesitance to draft defensemen as high as number four overall, like Hickey was by LA or somewhere thereabouts by the Islanders, on the likes of Bronislav Metze and Christian Kudryk? And I saw you mention Mike Milbury a couple times today for whatever reason, and so some of those names were in my head from that god-awful draft where they had four picks in the first round, and Tim Connolly was probably the most notable of any of them. So maybe there's something lingering from that, why they won't go D so high in the first round, or they wouldn't for a couple of years there.
Well, it's also in probability. If you look at the probability of a defenseman who's picked high, if you notice some of the players, I know that Shea Weber would be an example, are usually picked in the second or third round. You look at Hamonic. What was he, second or third round? So, you know, the defenseman, you can't always pinpoint, while forwards can tend to be more predictable. So when you're in the beginning of a rebuild, you're going to avoid that and take your defenseman deeper. That's why you saw the Islanders take defensemen deep, and, you know, get some nice surprises or some quality guys in the second, third, and fourth rounds. And, you know, that works. You know, obviously, you know, not high enough to get the Drew Doughtys of the world. So you have to go with the, you know, who is the guaranteed NHLer. And that's what it seems to be missed so often, I guess, on, you know, every time we bring up Josh Bailey, is that expectations that fans have of somebody who's picked in the first round, who, you know, is not the, you know, 50, 60 point player, yet he's steady defensively and plays a good possession game and keeps and is used on the top six, and it drives some Islander fans crazy. But if you look at his average, which is 0.5 points per game, and if you look at the averages of top six in the NHL, he's actually a top six player based on that points per game average. The points per game average for a top six is actually the bottom line, I think, is 0.4. So he's up and above, and they don't realize in the parity of this new NHL, it's a little bit different, and sometimes you have players that make the line better that don't necessarily derive all the points. And, you know, then there's always complaints, oh, that, you know, Bailey didn't get a shot. He didn't show up in this game. And, you know, when I talk to people around the Islanders, it's, you know, there's never really a complaint on Bailey because they know what they have. and that's what he is. So, you know, a valuable tool. Is he going to be an Islander for life? I don't think so. But he's certainly somebody that's being used, and I think he's a prime example of expectation and finding guarantee NHLers in the forward position and maximizing in all your picks is what they did in 2008. And we've seen other picks, you know, come and rise, and some other picks not rise. So I think that that's not a bad philosophy to put all together. Is it best with 2020 hindsight? I don't think so, but we don't always have that.
I think sometimes people too, and you mentioned about first round picks, but I think a lot of fans in general, with any pick, any guy that gets brought into the organization and gets a sniff at the NHL roster, they're expecting superstar. Listen, you've got an active roster every single night of 20 guys that needs to be filled for the long term and always has to constantly be improving. So that means, yeah, hopefully you have one or two superstars and one or two second-tier guys and things of that nature, but you need serviceable players up front, on the back end, and in goal. And not everybody that's picked in the first round, not everybody that's picked at all is going to pan out to be certainly guys that are not picked in the first round are going to frequently pan out to be superstars. Not everyone is a superstar, but they're all, you know, more or less still NHL caliber players. And that's the whole trick, is to flesh out. We've wanted to flesh out some of these rosters, but to flesh out an NHL roster of serviceable players of different, you know, skill sets, different toolboxes, if you will, that play a role. And when you look at the great teams of the past, the great teams of the present, especially when you talk about the playoffs, they're full with guys up and down the roster that have unique skill sets as opposed, you know, in comparison to guys on other lines, guys on other defense pairs and things like that. And that's why I think that definition of a guy, you know, the definition that gets thrown around a lot is, oh, he's a solid playoff player. You know, look at a guy like Cal Clutterbuck. I like Cal Clutterbuck a lot. He's my type of player. I really think he's got 6 goals this year. You can't ignore that. He's shown a penchant for a clutch goal here and there. Obviously, he plays a physical game. To me, that's a playoff player. You think wherever he was picked, and I'm not going to take a second away to do the research right now, but wherever he was picked, and or the fact that he was traded for Nino Niederreiter, which everybody freaked out about at the time, matters in the end during the playoffs when he's scoring a clutch goal and he's playing a crucial role on the team. Listen, up and down the roster, you've got guys of different skill sets that bring different things to the table. That in the end, when the goal of the team is to win the Stanley Cup, every single piece of that is just as valuable as the other. So you can't just look at a guy being drafted in the first round and think, hey, he's got to score 70, 80, whatever, how many points for this to be a justifiable pick. It's not an even scale like that. It doesn't work that way. The evaluation long term is much different and has so many factors that most people don't account for. Josh Bailey is a great example.
Yeah, and it also shows within the cap era, the most important thing in the cap era is to actually have players that you pick, especially early, be NHLers. You can't afford to miss. And, you know, you can look at one of Edmonton's woes is getting all those early picks. That's great. But all their other picks in their, you know, from second to seventh round have been not so good. And that's one of the reasons that they haven't been able to make a turnaround. You have to maximize your picks. And just as much as you can't afford to miss in the first 2 rounds anymore, you need to guarantee yourself that in probability if you have an NHLer. And I think in the end what will happen with Bailey is, and maybe a little bit like Hickey, Bailey is a above average third line player. But his point per, you know, the more he's used, he can still get a .5 average and still be valuable within the top 6. As the Islanders get in other players and fill in, Bailey will end up being, you know, maybe he's second line, maybe he's third line. Whatever it is, he's an attribute. And I think that people need to look at the possession numbers and also what he can do defensively. It's not always the shots on goal. It's obviously better. The more he shoots, the better he is because of the percentage. It's the same thing as people who have been criticizing Anders Lee, saying he's not playing well. His shooting percentage is actually lower than normal right now, and that will eventually right itself. But his play has actually been fine. And I think what's going to happen is that shooting percentage will eventually correct itself because eventually it has to start going in. And you're going to see him all of a sudden put in a bunch. And you're going to be like, oh, he suddenly woke up. No, he was playing that way before, but his shooting percentage was very low. And that's, you know, sometimes you have to look, you know, not just at, you know, how many shots they're getting on goal. Are they creating the opportunities? Are they keeping the puck in play? Are they helping the puck stay in the zone so that somebody else can kind of pass the puck and score? And I think there's a little bit more that needs to be. And maybe we'll talk about that and get some guests that can talk about that a little bit more. Because I find that on Isles Twitter, there tends to be a little bit of a, you know, everybody kind of wants the main thing. Is that guy getting shots? You know, is he making a difference that I can see? And we know from analytics, which is being used across the NHL now, analytics is about the things that you don't see. So, and sometimes they say it's something else entirely. And that seems to, you know, rail against those fans who have this emotional reaction to what they're seeing when they're not necessarily seeing the entire picture. So, you know, maybe we'll talk more about that and kind of get into that a little bit more down the line.
Yeah, I do think analytics a lot of times is about things that you don't see, because I certainly don't see them, and we've talked about that before, nor do I care to study the damn things. My brain just doesn't work that way. However, I will say that you kind of hinted around it. When you talk about the possession game, and that's something that I think, you know, goes hand in hand with present day analytics. But I also am of the mindset that that's something that if you've watched this game long enough, you start to get this innate feeling, almost like when you're watching on TV and you think you see a penalty. And without even really thinking about it, your eyes automatically look up to the area of the screen where you know that a referee is going to be to see if he has his hand up or not. You understand what I'm saying? Like I've caught myself over the years doing that thousands and thousands of times. Whereas, you know, a person that doesn't quite understand the game of hockey or a different game, we could probably talk the same way about, then sees a penalty call in that situation. He goes, what just happened? Well, you saw it because you're familiar with it. But when you're watching a game, you know, you can lose a game 3-0 and not necessarily play all that badly. You could be down 2-0 as the Islanders were on Saturday. And I prematurely reacted to that, which I did want to get to at some point, but and realize that you're not necessarily playing all that badly, or there are other factors, the situation might be. But in those situations, sometimes I think you're looking for quality chances. You're looking for possession. You're looking for shots on goal. You know, you're looking for that sort of thing. And, you know, if you understand the game well enough, that those things keep happening, that, you know, chances are you're going to have an opportunity to get back in it if you're down. If you don't happen to be playing very well, you're going to have the opportunity to kind of turn things around and maybe have a chance to win a game like that. You can feel that sort of thing coming. You can see it kind of coming. I think it's a natural thing if you're very familiar with the game. Of course, you could break it down analytically and statistically and all that, but I think sometimes you have that innate sense. And again, you know, just because, you know, a game's you're down a couple goals or you're in a situation you don't want to be in, I think if you have a feel for the game and you're looking at the players that you know very well, you understand what type of players they are and you understand whether they are or they aren't on their game, whatever the score may be, that's when you know you have a true sense of what's going on. And I think sometimes that's it's almost like an instinctual thing that a lot of people don't understand.
Yeah, it definitely. You can even know before analytics came along, Herb Brooks knew that you can, if you go and you bring in the puck as opposed to dumping the puck, it works better. So you know some things innately without necessarily going into the analytics. And I think that, you know, the analytics just show why things do work or don't work sometimes. And, despite doing some exercises and some pieces that have kind of you know, given some information of how it works and how they look a certain way. I am no math maven, as anybody who's might have grown up with me would know, as a somebody who's a designer and writer. Math doesn't come easy. And, you know, I've only been able to be as good as asking questions and getting from those who are far better at me than me at it and getting that type of information. So, you know, if somebody says, oh, I don't, you know, buy this analytics, you know, I'm not into the math. Let me tell you, I'm not into the math either. But luckily, I've been able to have it shown to me of how things work, and I've been able to learn a little bit on the, you know, and be able to share it. And I'm sure we'll do some, you know, later this season. And of course, when the season is over, we can go into some of the numbers and see what we, you know, look at it and see if we saw it during the season. So we'll see soon enough.
Is there a visual comparison to that that happens in real time, that if you're of the analytical mind in the hockey world, you can watch a game and have something equate right away to where you look after the game and you actually see the numbers, or after a period, if you're paying that close attention and say, yep, that's what I thought, or no, I was wrong there. Is there a direct comparison to that as things
correlation,
happen?
Correlation, I would think so, but correlation. I would have to get – yeah, I would think so. You know, just look at the possession. You know, if the team is winning the possession game, they're controlling the puck. They're continuing the play. The play is constantly in the offensive zone, so that you're, you know, those are indications of the possession game working. An example of that is the tear that the Islanders did last year for a while, where they were just winning and winning and winning games, and what they were doing is keeping that puck in the offensive zone and being able to capitalize on it. And when they don't do that, is, you know, when we saw the puck all of a sudden, you know, them looking silly in their own defensive zone. Conversely, when they don't win the possession game, you'll see that the Islanders tend to, when they're winning the possession game, derive more shots. That's an easy thing to see. The Islanders play their game, they usually generate more offense. And if they're not, then they're generating more opportunities, or real opportunities. So sometimes, you know, sometimes we can see it within the older stats of, you know, how many shots they got off and stuff like that. But, yes, you can see it, and sometimes you can get a sense of what they're doing well and what they're not doing well. You know, if they're able to break out a couple plays and score when, you know, and they're able to create a lot of opportunities, they tend to play that's the kind of the offensive game, and that's when they're, you know, and that's the one thing people keep on complaining, that they need a forward. They're still one of the top offensive teams in the NHL right now. So I don't quite agree with that. Could they be better? Certainly. But, you know, the fact is, offensively, these things are working for them. It's the sustaining that which has been the problem. That's what I see has been the problem. They are not able to sustain, and I've kind of alluded to this on Twitter, that right now I think Letty has played much better on the West Coast trip, and I think he's starting to play a little bit better. I'm still waiting for Boychuk to get a little bit more in gear, but they're both not playing the level that they played last year. And you could say, oh, it's because they're having, you know, they're no longer playing in a contract year, and you might be right. Maybe that was the extra incentive. But they were both playing an all-star level last year. And by that, they were making a huge difference on the Islanders, creating opportunity and in the possession game by playing that level. And they've kind of been a little bit shaking in and out of it. And I think Letty has woken up a little bit more. And I would like to see Boychuk kind of turn it on. But they really need that. And it has to come from somewhere. So if this team doesn't match from last year, the thing that I see right now as the big difference is that Boychuk and Letty are not playing to the same level as last year. That's the big thing that I'm not seeing quite just yet. And if they can get to that level or as close as possible, the team should be able to go on a tear once again And you know, look, despite their dips and our complaints and the roller coaster that we sometimes put ourselves through, here they are in a 5-game stint and back up to fourth. And you, well, you said 6 overall in points. So for a team that's, you know, struggled a bit and still are waiting for, you know, Strome has just come up and started to make a little bit of a difference, and it can continue that, then you're going to see a lot of, and with Hickey back, you're going to see a lot of equalization and better play. And here they are within the conversation of not being out of it at all, despite our kind of clutching and grabbing of everything every time something goes wrong. You know, a week ago we were complaining about the team and where they were at and hoping it would rise, and here they are. Risen a bit, things are coming to, you know, hopefully a little bit more healthy, and here's Strome coming back and making a difference. So if that could, those things can continue, and Letty and Boychuk start to capture a little bit more of the play from last year, you can see this team start to rise to the top four or the top three, for as long as possible. And then, you know, injuries will happen, things will happen, and there will be dips again. But those are the things that I look for.
Yeah, that's not the first time we've overreacted to short stretches this season already, is it?
No, and I get it. You know, as fans, and there are things that frustrate us, and there's inconsistencies, and I think that we have this hyper view, and I think that the social media creates the sounding board, and it becomes our vent. And it becomes our you know, emotion. And then sometimes I think because it's in social media and because we've said it, we also buy into it more. And I think there's a little bit more. If you're in a bar and you have a reaction to a game, you know, no one's remembering your conversation, you know, or you hope not. But, you know, and I think that social media and Facebook have created this running history, and we revisit it, and then we hear from other people, and then we get more enraged about it, and we seem to have this much more emotional outlet, and the emotion kind of takes it over. That's what I've noticed, you know, in changes to the game from a fan's perspective with the advent of social media and the internet, is not just being able to share in the forums, whether it's Isles Mania or HF boards, or, you know, just on Twitter and Facebook. It's also that those places that become a vent, well, they kind of make you even more emotionally wrought when you see other people's reaction. And, you know, that's why I tend to, on Twitter, try to go for humor, because just try to equalize, because the rest of it is just all drama. And when it becomes all drama, it just hypes us, you know, more up to maybe, just maybe, overreact to what's going on. When we step back, it's not so bad. And here we are, despite these things that we've cited, and despite that we sounded off on things that could come up again, and nothing is necessarily solved if we don't feel that the coach is necessarily the guy to get us to the next level. There's certainly going to be some issues with that, perhaps. But at least the talent of the team has them, you know, up and competing. So sometimes you kind of need to kind of take a step back from the social media and the buy-in, because I think there's a lot of buying in and not so much step back. And I think that, and, you know, maybe we'll see, you know, maybe we're learning of how to deal with social media as fans. And maybe we have a tendency to buy in a little bit too much.
Yeah, I have definitely been one myself to overreact here and there. I still do it routinely. A good example that I brought up earlier was, you know, the Islanders got down 2 goals here in Tampa on Saturday, early in the second period. I didn't particularly care for the way they played in the first, although I did see some good things. And my quick social media response was to go back to my Fire Capuano train, which is, you know, my gut instinct. I'm not a, you know, we've talked about it 1,000 times. I just I want to see some other things before I really get on board there. But, you know, for now, it's another, to me, that was another slow start. Two teams that I thought looked
awful in the first period, and then a 2-0 deficit and going, you know, here we go. I mean, to me, that was my gut instinct there is preparation. Are we ready to play? Yeah, they played last night, but whatever, and all these things. When if you do take a second, myself, I've admitted it to myself 1,000 times, if you take a second to digest it a little bit more slowly rather than reacting and succumbing to this urge that we have these days to share your thoughts across this large, you know, audience, it's not just a conversation that you have in a bar with your buddy and he goes, are you serious? What do you mean? You think that guy sucks? He doesn't suck. Look at what he's done the last X amount of time. And you know, that's not really remembered other than at that time, like you said. But if you write that down and you broadcast it to the masses, it's there forever. Again, I'm not saying I'm going to come off my Fire Capuano train anytime soon in moments of despair, but I do recognize it as it happens. So I totally understand what you're saying there.
Yeah, and, you know, it's and the other thing is that, and I've noticed this, one of the callers last week was George Pace, who he and I have quite a few debates. So he was saying that he was Josh Bailey's biggest fan. It took me a little bit to realize that it was George because he and I have had many debates online. And Twitter doesn't always capture because his argument. But when he came on and talked about being hard to be, you know, not being convinced by this and having a very, you know, being able to have his voice interact with us, he made a much better argument. And that's the other limitation of Twitter. The 140 characters doesn't always contain everybody's argument or, you know, really thinking things out. It's more of a almost a vomit, a very quick, brief vomit of information that you hope makes some sort of semblance of sense. And I think that you know, that's why it's good to have the podcast and people call in, because I wouldn't have appreciated George's take as much until I heard his voice and he presented that argument over Jack Capuano on our podcast last week. And I think that's the, you know, it just shows sometimes the limitation of the social media as well, because there are some converse and good points sometimes from them. I'm not going to buy in to his Josh Bailey take, but I will say that he made a much better argument of not being convinced and feeling that, you know, Jack has kind of shown most of, you know, how could things change when you keep on showing the same things over and over again. And that rang to me as something that really, I think he made a good point. And that's something that we're going to see bear out. You know, will George and those who want Capuano out be, you know, will that happen? Or will the Islanders actually get to the playoffs and take steps and really, you know, go there? Will that satisfy everybody? Who knows? But that's neither here nor there. But to me, the most important thing is the Islanders getting further into the playoffs and showing growth. And that's what's really, you know, what it's all about.
You know, yeah, and speaking of callers, we were a little rushed in the show planning tonight, and that's on me. But we were hoping to get some interaction. Last week was pretty cool. We had several callers. We had some others maybe we didn't get to that I heard about after the fact or had trouble getting in or whatever the case was. But moving forward, folks, let's those of you that are listening to it now, let's keep this in mind. We are capable of taking your calls at any time on whatever subject. Perhaps we'll prompt you one way or another, episode by episode, but we'll tweet out that number more proactively moving forward toward the next show. And you can sound off on whatever you like, and maybe we can experience some of that, you know, different style of take or a different way to listen to your take rather than via Twitter, which, you know, I utilize, you utilize, and so many people utilize these days. But I do believe it's the laziest medium that we have at our disposal in the middle of watching a game. It's right there at your fingertips. Everybody's a second screen viewer. We work in those industries, so we know that term, and we understand what, you know, that's the reality of the situation these days. And, you know, it's just so simple to vent, especially rather than praise people, but to vent in a negative forum in that way, but it lingers forever. And I think that, you know, we make jokes about Isles Twitter in general about being so negative and stuff like that, but that's the easiest way for us to monitor the pulse of the fans too these days. And do people, you know, it's like leaving a review for a restaurant, leaving a review for, you know, on a site like Glassdoor or LinkedIn or, you know, a job that you left. How many people go out of their way after they leave a job to go to one of those sites and leave praise? Not that many. How many people are, you know, have an axe to grind and after they leave a place and they want to, you know, make their mark on the way out the door, especially since in those forums they can be completely anonymous, whereas on Twitter, you know, you have some handle that maybe somebody recognizes you, maybe they don't. But, you know, you take time out of your day to vent, to get that off your chest, and that's an easy, yes, but also perhaps lazy way and perhaps an irresponsible way of, you know, sounding off to the masses. So we would like to encourage more calls, more direct interaction. I couldn't figure out the chat room for the life of me last week, and I don't know if you could either, but that doesn't surprise me.
I didn't even try this week.
Doesn't surprise me, seeing as how we you know, we sit here in silence sometimes when we start this damn thing. But yeah, we'd love to hear from more people moving forward, and we'll definitely tweet that out and get that going.
Yeah, and you know, there's, you know, we understand that not everybody's going to agree. Just like we, you know, there's going to be differing opinions on stuff, and I think that there needs to be a good dialogue with all different sides, because I think nobody knows it all. And, you know, the fact is the more that you find out, at least what I've found in the writing of what'll be, you know, coming up in February, it'll be 9 years. The more I know, what I realize is what little I do know. And I think that's true of anything, that I think that we all have to have room to be able to have a dialogue and learn a little bit more from one another. That just like when George came online on the show last week, there was something to be gleaned from what you thought was just somebody who just, I want Jack gone. And there was more to it. And I think that that's why the podcast and the dialogue is important, because Twitter does not encompass it all. The blogs don't encompass it all. We've seen the pundits, whether you listen to TSN radio or Sportsnet or anything else, don't know at all. They try to make their best guess, and you know, they'll tell you the same thing, is the more you know, the more little you do know, because there's so many facets to what goes on. So, but anyway, as we start to wind down here, I think that we've kind of hit on a couple things. I will have a couple blogs this week. A little bit on why we haven't seen kids this year on the Islanders, and bring up some points. And we'll talk about a few other elements. And anything else from you, John?
Oh, no. I just I thought that I might take a shot to my local hockey brethren and recognize them for their incessant chance of shoot, no matter where the puck may be. And every time somebody in the home sweater falls down, it's, according to the people that sat behind me last week, a cross check. I am not sure if they think that's the term for penalty or if they actually understand what a cross check might be. I think that's a complaint of most astute hockey fans, and I don't think that's particular to my local market, but I've seen it for years and I have higher expectations now. And I just wish that would fizzle away, but hey, mm-hmm. Not the most important thing, I guess.
Yeah, and hopefully we've hit on the most important questions. And yes, Tampa fans, and any local hockey fans, especially when you're dealing with a little bit more of a homer, you're going to get all that. But I think the biggest question of all might be:
have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I was advised not to comment on that recently. I think that I will leave that one alone. I will not say anything affirmative or anything at all, actually, on the matter. And instead, I will comment that, this has been an interesting week.
Sorry, I picked the wrong week. Quit sniffing glue.
Great. And as we play with the soundboard, we will close it out. Until next week, folks. thanks for listening, and to listen to both of us babble for an hour. And see you then. Adios.